do get off this rock, I don't want to spend my days dodging Sith blasters on the front lines.
We won't be fighting the Sith for much longer, son. We've got them on the run now.
The commander spoke with such calm assurance, Dez was half tempted to believe him.
That's not how I hear it, Dez said. Rumor is the Brotherhood of Darkness has been winning more than its share of the battles. I heard it's got more than a dozen regions under its control now.
That was before General Hoth, one of the other soldiers chimed in.
Dez had heard of Hoth on the Holonet. He was a bona fide hero of the Republic. Victorious in half a dozen major confrontations, he was a brilliant strategist who knew how to snatch victory from the jaws of defeat. Not surprising given his background.
Hoth?
He asked innocently, glancing down at his cards. Garbage. He folded his hand.
Isn't he a Jedi?
He is.
The commander replied, peeking at his own cards. He pushed in a small wager.
A Jedi Master, to be more accurate. And a fine soldier, too.
You couldn't ask for a better man to lead the Republic war effort.
The Sith are more than just soldiers, you know,
the drunken ensign said earnestly, his voice even louder than before.
Some of them can use the Force just like the Jedi. You can't beat them with blasters alone.
Dez had heard plenty of wild tales of Jedi performing extraordinary feats through the mystical power of the Force, but he figured they were legends and myth, or at least exaggerations. He knew there were powers that transcended the physical world. His own premonitions were evidence of that. But the stories of what the Jedi could do were just too impossible to believe. If the Force was really such a powerful weapon, why was this war taking so long?
The idea of answering to a Jedi Master doesn't really appeal to me, he said. I've heard some strange things about what they believe in. No passion, no emotion. Sounds like they want to turn us all into droids.
Another round of cards was dealt out to the remaining players.
The Jedi are guided by wisdom, the commander explained. They don't let things like desire or anger cloud their judgment.
Anger has its uses, Dez pointed out.
It's gotten me out of some nasty spots.
I think the trick is not to get into those spots in the first place,
the lieutenant countered in her gentle voice. The hand ended a few turns later. The young woman who had bought the ensign his drink came up on 20, not a great hand, but not a bad one either. She looked over at the commander as he flipped up his cards and smiled when he had only 19. Her smile faded when the drunken ensign showed his 21. When he scooped up the pot, she cut his laugh short with a friendly elbow to his ribs. Everyone anteed and the dealer flicked out another pair of cards to each player.
The Jedi are the defenders of the Republic, the lieutenant went on earnestly. Their ways can seem strange to ordinary citizens, but they're on our side. All they want is peace.
Really?
Dez said, glancing at his cards and pushing in his chips.
I thought they wanted to wipe out the Sith.
The Sith are an illegal organization, the lieutenant explained. She folded her cards after a moment of careful deliberation. The Senate passed a bill outlawing them nearly 3,000 years ago, shortly after Revan and Malak brought destruction to the entire galaxy.
I always heard Revan save the Republic, he said.
The commander jumped back into the conversation.
Revan's story is complicated, he said. But the fact remains the Sith and their teachings were banned by the Senate. Their very existence is a violation of Republic law, and with good reason. The Jedi understand the threat the Sith represent. That's why they've joined the fleet.
For the good of the galaxy,
the Sith must be wiped out once and for all.
The drunken ensign won the hand again, his second in a row. Sometimes it was better to be lucky than good.
So the Republic says the Sith must be wiped out,
Dez said as he anteed up for the next hand.
If the Sith were the ones in charge, I bet they'd say the same thing about the Jedi.
You wouldn't say that if you knew what the Sith were really like, one of the other soldiers said. I've fought against them. They're bloodthirsty killers.
Dez laughed.
Yeah, how dare they try to kill you in the middle of a war? Don't they know you're busy trying to kill them? How rude.
You bloody calf-mutt,
the soldier snapped, rising up from his seat.
Sit down, Deckman, the commander barked.
The soldier did as he was told, but Dez could feel the tension in the air. Everyone else at the table, with the possible exception of the two officers, was glaring at him. Good. The last thing on their minds now was cards. Angry people didn't make good sabacc players. The commander sensed things were bad, too. He did his best to defuse the situation. The Sith followed the teachings of the dark side, son. He said to Dez, if you saw the kinds of things they've done during this war, and not just to other soldiers, they don't care if innocent civilians suffer. Only half listening, Dez glanced at his cards and placed a wager. I'm not stupid, Commander, he said then. Whether the Republic officially acknowledges it or not, you're at war with the Brotherhood of Darkness, and bad things happen during a war on both sides. So don't try to convince me the Sith are monsters. The people, just like you and me. Of all the players at the table, only the commander folded his cards. Dez knew that at least a few of the soldiers were playing bad hands, simply for the chance to take him down. The commander sighed. You're right, to a point. The ordinary troopers who serve in the army because they don't know what the Sith Masters and the Brotherhood of Darkness are really like are just people. But you have to look at the ideals behind this war. You have to understand what each side really stands for. Enlighten me, Commander. Dez put just a hint of condescension in his voice and casually tossed in some more chips, knowing it would rile up the table even more. He was glad to see that nobody folded. He was playing them like a Bith musician trilling out a tune on a sabrecat. The Jedi seek to preserve peace, the commander reiterated. They serve the cause of justice. Whenever possible, they use their power to aid those in need. They seek to serve, not to rule. They believe that all beings, regardless of species or gender, are created equal. Surely you can understand that. It was more a statement than a question, but Dez answered anyway. But all beings aren't really equal, are they? I mean, some are smarter, or stronger, or better at cards. He drew a small smile from the commander with the last comment, though everyone else at the table scowled. True enough, son. But isn't it the duty of the strong to help the weak? Dez shrugged. He didn't believe much in equality. Working to make everybody equal didn't leave much chance for anyone to achieve greatness.
So what about the Brotherhood of Darkness?
He asked.
What do they believe in?
They follow the teachings of the dark side. The only thing they seek is power. They believe the natural order of the galaxy is for the weak to serve the strong.
Sounds pretty good if you're one of the strong.
Dez flipped his cards up, then scooped up the pot, relishing the grumbling and curses muttered under the breath of the losers. Dez flashed a nasty grin around the table.
For the sake of the Republic, I hope you guys are better soldiers than you are sabacc players.
You mud-crutch, rankweed coward!
The ensign shouted, jumping up and spilling his drink onto the floor.
If it wasn't for us, the Sith would be all over this pit of a world!
Another miner would have taken a swing at Dez, but the ensign, even more than slightly drunk, had enough military discipline to keep his fists at his sides. A stern glare from the commander made him sit down and mumble an apology. Dez was impressed, and a little disappointed.
We all know why the Republic cares about Apatros, he said, stacking his chips and trying to appear nonchalant.
In fact, he was scanning the table to see if anyone else was getting ready to make a move on him.
You use cortosis in the hulls of your ships. You use it in your weapons casings. You even use it in your body armor. Without us, you wouldn't stand a chance in this war. So don't pretend you're doing any favors here. You need us as much as we need you.
Nobody had anteed yet. All eyes were drawn to the drama unfolding among the players. The card shark hesitated. Its limited programming, uncertain how to handle the situation. Dez knew Groshek was watching from the far side of the cantina, his hand near the stun blaster he kept stashed behind the bar. He doubted the Nymordian would need it, though. True enough, the commander conceded, pushing his ante in. The others, including Dez, followed suit.
But at least we pay you for the cortosis we use. The Sith would just take it from you.
No, Des corrected, studying his cards. You pay Oro for the cortosis. Those credits don't make it all the way down to a guy like me.
He folded his hand, but didn't stop talking.
See, that's the problem with the Republic. In the core, everything's great. People are healthy, wealthy, and happy. But out here on the rim, things aren't so easy.
I've been working the mines almost as long as I can remember in one way or another, and I still owe Oro enough credits to fill a freighter home. But I don't see any Jedi coming to save me from that little bit of injustice.
Nobody had an answer for him this time, not even the commander. Des decided they'd talked enough politics. He wanted to focus on winning the 2,000 credits that had built up in the Sabacc pot. He went in for the kill.
Don't try to sell me on your Jedi and your Republic, because that's exactly what it is. Your Republic. You say the Sith only respect strength? Well, that's pretty much the way things are out here on the rim, too. You look out for yourself, because nobody else will. That's why the Sith keep finding new recruits willing to join them out here. People with nothing feel like they've got nothing to lose. And if the Republic doesn't figure that out pretty soon, the Brotherhood of Darkness is going to win this war no matter how many Jedi you have leading your army.
Maybe we should just stick to cards, the lieutenant suggested after a long, uncomfortable silence.
That works for me, Des said.
No hard feelings?
No hard feelings,
the commander said, forcing a smile. A few of the other soldiers murmured assent, but Des knew the hard feelings were still there. He'd done everything he could to make sure they ran deep.
Chapter 4.
The hours ticked by. Other miners began to arrive, the day shift coming in to replace the night crew that had left. The card shark kept dealing, and the players kept betting. Dez's stack of chips was growing steadily larger, and the Sabacc pot kept on growing. 3,000 credits, 4,000, 5. None of the players seemed to be having fun anymore. Des figured his scorching rant had burned off all the pleasure from the game. Des didn't care. He didn't play Sabacc for fun. It was a job, same as working the mines. A way to earn credits and pay off Oro so he could leave Apatros behind forever. Two of the soldiers pushed away from the table. Their credits cleaned out. Their seats were soon filled by miners from the day shift. The lure of the massive Sabacc pot was enough to draw them in, despite their reluctance to go up against Des. Another hour passed, and the senior officers, the lieutenant and the commander, finally packed it in. They, too, were replaced by miners with visions of hitting one good hand and cashing in the unclaimed Sabacc pot. The Republic soldiers who stuck around, like the ensign who'd first challenged Des, must have had deep, deep pockets. With the constant influx of new players and new money, Des was forced to change his strategy. He was up several hundred credits. He had enough of a cushion built up that he could afford to lose a few hands if he had to. Now his only concern was protecting the Sabacc pot. If he didn't have a hand he thought he could win with, he'd come up in the first few turns. He wasn't going to give anyone else a chance to build up a hand of 23. He stopped folding, even when he had weak cards. Sitting out a hand gave the other players too much of a chance to win. Some lucky shifts and some poor choices by his opponents made sure his strategy worked, though not without a cost. His efforts to protect the Sabacc pot began to eat into his profits. His stack of winnings shrank quickly, but it would all be worth it if he won the Sabacc pot. Through hand after agonizing hand, players continued to come and go. One by one, the soldiers gave up their seats, forced out when they ran out of chips and couldn't afford more. Of the original group, only Des and the ensign remained. The ensign's pile was growing. A few of the soldiers stayed to watch, rooting for their man to beat the miner with the big mouth. Other spectators came and went.
Some were just waiting for a player to drop so they could swoop in and take the seat. Others were drawn by the intensity of the table and the size of the pots. After another hour, the sabacc pot hit 10,000 chips, the maximum limit. Any credits paid into the sabacc pot now were wasted. They went straight into the Oro accounts. But nobody complained, not with the chance to win a small fortune on the table. Dez glanced up at the chrono on the wall. The cantina would be closing in less than an hour. When he'd first sat down at the table, he'd felt certain he was going to win big. For a while, he'd been ahead, but the last few hours had drained his chips. Working to protect the sabacc pot was crippling him. He'd gone through all his profits and had to rebuy in twice. He'd fallen into the classic gambler's trap, becoming so obsessed with winning the big pot that he'd lost sight of how much he was losing. He'd let the game get personal. His shirt was hard and sticky with sweat. His legs were numb from sitting so long, and his back was aching from hunching forward expectantly to study his cards. He was down almost 1,000 credits on the night, but none of the other players had been able to cash in on his misfortune. With the sabacc pot capped, all the antes and penalties went straight to Oro. He'd have to work a month of grueling shifts in the mines if he ever wanted to see any of those credits again. But it was too late to turn back now. His only consolation was that the Republic ensign was down at least twice as much as he was. Yet each time the man ran out of chips, he'd just reach into his pocket and pull out another stack of credits. As if he had unlimited funds. Or as if he just didn't care. The card shark fired out another hand. As he peeked at his cards, Dez began to feel the first real hints of self-doubt. What if his feeling was wrong this time? What if this wasn't his night to win? He couldn't remember a moment in the past when his gift had betrayed him. But that didn't mean it couldn't happen. He pushed his chips in with a weak hand, defying every instinct that told him to fold. He'd have to come up at the start of the next turn, no matter how weak his cards were. Any longer and someone else might steal the sabacc pot he was working so hard to collect. The marker flickered and the card shifted. Dez didn't bother to look. He simply flipped over his cards and muttered, "Coming up." When he saw his hand, he felt like he'd been slapped. He was sitting at negative 23 exactly. A bomb out. The penalty cleaned out his stack of chips.
"Whoa, big fella," the ensign mocked drunkenly. "You must be lump-soaked to come up on that. What the bricks were you thinking?"
"Maybe he doesn't understand the difference between plus 23 and minus 23, said one of the soldiers watching the match, grinning like a Manka cat.
Dez tried to ignore them as he paid the penalty. He felt empty, hollow.
"You don't talk so much when you're losing, huh?"
the ensign sneered. Hate. Dez didn't feel anything else at first. Pure, white-hot hatred consumed every thought, every motion, and every ounce of reason in his brain. Suddenly, he didn't care about the pot, didn't care about how many credits he'd already lost. All he wanted was to wipe the smug expression from the ensign's face, and there was only one way he could do it. He shot a savage glare in the ensign's direction, but the man was too drunk to be intimidated. Without taking his eyes off his enemy, Dez swiped his Oro account card into the reader and rang up another buy-in, ignoring the logical part of his mind that tried to talk him out of it. The card shark, its circuits and wires oblivious to what was really going on, pushed a stack of chips toward him and uttered its typically cheery, "Good luck." Dez opened with the ace and two of sabers. He was at 17, a dangerous hand. Lots of potential to go too high on his next card and bomb out. He hesitated, knowing that the smart move was to fold.
"Having second thoughts?" the ensign chided.
Acting on an impulse he couldn't even explain, Dez moved his two into the interference field, then pushed his chips into the pot. He was letting his emotions guide him, but he no longer cared. And when the next card came up as a three, he knew what he had to do. He shoved his three into the interference field beside the two that was already there. Then he bet the maximum wager and waited for the switch. There were actually two ways to win the sabacc pot. One was to get a hand that totaled 23 exactly, a pure sabacc. But there was an even better hand, the idiot's array. In modified Bespin rules, if you had a hand of 2 and 3 in the same suit and drew the face card known as the idiot, which had no value at all, you had an idiot's array, 23 in the literal sense. It was the rarest hand possible, and it was worth more than even a pure sabacc. Dez was 2/3 of the way there. All he needed now was a switch to take his 10 and replace it with the idiot. Of course, that meant there had to be a switch. And even then, he'd have to draw the idiot off it. And there were only 2 idiots in the entire 76-card deck. It was a ridiculously long shot. The marker came up red. The cards shifted. Dez didn't even have to look at his hand. He knew. He stared right into the ensign's eyes. Coming up. The ensign looked down at his own hand to see what the switch had given him and began to laugh so hard he could barely show his hand. He had the 2 of flasks, the 3 of flasks, and the idiot. There were gasps of surprise and murmurs of disbelief from the crowd.
How do you like that one, boys?
He cackled.
Idiot's array on the switch!
He stood up, reaching out for the stack of chips on the small pedestal that sat in the center of the table, representing the sabacc pot. Dez whipped his hand out and snagged the young man's wrist in a grip as cold and hard as Durasteel, then flipped over his own cards. The entire cantina became silent as a tomb. The ensign's laughter died in his throat. A second later, he pulled his hand free and sat back down, dumbfounded. From the far edge of the table, somebody let out a long, low whistle of amazement. The rest of the crowd burst into noise.
Never in my life. Can't believe. Statistically impossible. 2 idiots arrays in the same hand?
The card shark summarized the result in the purest analytical fashion.
We have 2 players with hands of equal value. The hand will be determined by a sudden demise.
The ensign didn't react with the same kind of calm.
You stupid mudcrutch!
He spat out, his voice strangled with rage.
Now nobody's going to get that sabacc pot!
His eyes bulged out wildly. A vein was pulsing on his forehead. One of his fellow soldiers had placed a hand on his shoulder, as if afraid his friend might leap across the table to try to choke the life out of the miner on the other side. The ensign was right. Neither of them would be collecting the sabacc pot on this hand. In a sudden demise, each player was dealt 1 more card, and the value of the hands was recalculated. If you had the better hand, you'd win. But you wouldn't get the sabacc pot unless you scored 23 exactly. That, however, seemed impossible. There were no more idiots to deal out to preserve an idiot's array, and no single card had a value higher than the ace's 15. Not that Dez cared. It was enough to have destroyed his opponent's will, to have crushed his hopes and robbed him of his victory. He could feel the ensign's hate, and he responded to it. It was like a living being, an entity he could draw strength from, fueling his own raging inferno. But Dez didn't put his emotions out on display for the rest of the crowd to see. The hate burning in him was his own private store. A power raging inside him so fierce, he felt it could crack the world if he let it escape. The dealer flicked out 2 cards face up for everyone to see. They were both 9s. Before anyone even had time to react, the droid had recalculated the hand, determined that the 2 players were still tied, and fired out another card to each of them. The ensign took an 8, but Dez got another 9. Idiot 2, 3, 9, 9, 23. He reached out slowly and tapped his cards, whispering a single word to his opponent. Sabacc. The soldier went ballistic. He leapt up, grabbed the underside of the table with both hands, and gave a mighty heave. Only the weight of the table and the built-in stabilizers kept it from flipping over, though it rocked and slammed back into the ground with a deafening crash. All the drinks on it spilled over. Ale and lum washed across the electronic cards, causing them to spark and short out.
"Sir, please don't touch the table,"
the card shark implored in a pitiful voice.
"Shut up, you hunk of rusted scrap metal!"
The ensign grabbed one of the overturned mugs from the table and hurled it at the droid. It connected with a ringing thud. The droid stumbled back and fell over. The ensign thrust a finger at Dez.
"You cheated! Nobody gets Sabacc on a sudden demise! Not unless he cheats!"
Dez didn't say anything. He didn't even stand up. But his muscles were braced in case the soldier made a move. The ensign turned back to the droid as it rose shakily to its feet.
"You're in on it!"
He threw another mug at it, connecting again and dropping the droid a second time. Two of the other soldiers tried to restrain him, but he shook free of their grip. He spun around, waving his arms at the crowd.
"You're all in on it, dirty Sith-loving scum! You hate the Republic! You hate us! We know you do! We know!"
The miners pushed in closer, grumbling angrily. The ensign's insults weren't far off the mark. There were a lot of bad feelings toward the Republic on Apatros. And if he didn't watch his mouth, somebody was going to show him just how strong those feelings were.
"We give our lives to protect you, but you don't give a wabba. Any chance to humiliate us, you take it."
His friends had grabbed him again, trying to wrestle him out the door. But there was no way they could get through the crowd now. From the looks on their faces, the soldiers were terrified. With good reason, Dez thought. None of them was armed. Their blasters were back on their ship. Now, they were trapped in the center of a hostile crush of heavily muscled miners who'd been drinking all night. And their friend wouldn't shut up.
"You should get down on your knees and thank us each and every time we land on this ball of bantha sweat you call a planet. But you're too stupid to know how lucky you are to have us on your side. You're nothing but a bunch of filthy, illiterate..."
A lum bottle hurled anonymously from the crowd struck him hard in the side of his head, cutting his words short. He dropped to the floor, dragging his friends down with him. Dez stood motionless as a mass of angry miners surged. The sound of a blaster caused everyone to freeze. Groshek had climbed up onto the top of the bar, his stunner already charging up the fire again. But everybody knew the next shot wouldn't be aimed at the ceiling.
"We are closed!"
he croaked as loud as his raspy voice could manage.
"Everybody get out of my cantina!"
The miners began to back off, and the soldiers stood up warily. The ensign swayed, the cut on his forehead bleeding into his eye.
"You three first!"
the Nymordian said to the ensign and the soldiers who supported him. He waved the barrel of his weapon menacingly around the room.
"Clear a path! Get them out of here!"
Everyone but the soldiers remained frozen. This wasn't the first time Groshek had whipped out the stunner. The Blastech CS-33 fire spray stun rifle was one of the finest non-lethal crowd control devices on the market, capable of incapacitating multiple targets with a single shot. More than a few of the miners had felt the brutal force of its wide-beam blast, rendering them unconscious. From personal experience, Dez could attest to the fact that it wasn't a pain anyone was likely to forget. Once the Republic crew vanished into the night, the rest of the crowd began to move slowly toward the door. Dez fell into step with the masses, but as he passed the bar, Groshek pointed the blaster right at him.
"Not you. You stay put."
Dez didn't move a millimeter until all the others were gone. He wasn't scared. He didn't think Groshek would really fire. Still, he saw no advantage in giving him a reason to. Only after the last patron had left and closed the door did Groshek lower his arm. He clambered down awkwardly from the bar and set the rifle on the table, then turned to Dez.
"I figured it was safer to keep you here with me for a bit,"
he explained.
"Those soldiers were pretty mad. They might be waiting for you on their walk home."
Dez smiled. "I didn't figure you were mad at me," he said. Groshek snorted.
Oh, I'm mad at you. That's why you're going to help me clean up this mess.
Des sighed and shook his head in mock exasperation.
You saw what happened, Groshek. I was just an innocent bystander.
Groshek wasn't in any mood to hear it.
Just start picking up the chairs, he muttered.
With the help of the card shark, at least it was good for something besides dealing, Des thought, they finished cleaning up in just over an hour. When they were done, the droid waddled out on shaky legs, heading toward the maintenance facilities for repairs. Before it left, Des made sure his sabacc winnings had been credited to his account. Now that it was just the two of them, Groshek motioned Des over to the bar, grabbed a couple of glasses, and took a bottle down from the shelf.
Kortig brandy, he said, pouring them each half a glass. Direct from Kashyyyk. Not the hard stuff the Wookiees drink, though. Milder, smoother, more tame.
Des took a sip and nearly choked as the fiery liquid burned its way down his throat.
This is tame! I'd hate to see what the Wookiees drink.
Groshek shrugged.
What do you expect? They're Wookiees.
With a second sip, Des was more careful. He let it roll across his tongue, savoring the rich flavor.
This is good, Groshek. And expensive, I bet. What's the occasion?
You had quite a day. I thought you could use it.
Des drained his glass. Groshek filled him up halfway, then corked the bottle and set it back on the shelf.
I'm worried about you, the Nymoidian rasped. Worried about what happened in the fight with Gerd. He didn't give me much choice.
The Nymoidian nodded.
I know. Still, you bit off his thumb. And tonight, you nearly started a riot in my bar.
Hey, I just wanted to play cards, Des protested.
It's not my fault things got out of hand. Maybe, maybe not. I saw you tonight. You are goading that soldier, playing him like you play everyone who sits down against you. You push them, twist them, make them dance like puppets on a string. But this time, you never let up. Even when you had the advantage, you kept pushing. You wanted him to go off like that.
Are you saying I planned this whole thing?
Des laughed.
Come on, Groshek. It was the cards that set him off. You know I wasn't cheating. It's just not possible. How could I control what cards were dealt?
It was more than the cards, Des,
Groshek said, his gravelly voice dropping so low that Des had to lean in close to hear.
You were angry, Des. More angry than I've ever seen you before. I could feel it from all the way across the room, like something in the air. We could all feel it. The crowd turned ugly in a hurry, Des. It was like they were feeding off your rage and your hate. You were projecting waves of emotion, a storm of anger and fury. Everyone else just kind of got swept up in it. The crowd, that soldier, everybody, even me. It was all I could do to aim that first shot from my blaster at the ceiling. Every instinct in my body was telling me to fire it into the crowd. I wanted to take them all down and leave them writhing in pain.
Des couldn't believe his ears.
Listen to what you're saying, Groshek. It's crazy. You know I wouldn't do that. I couldn't do that. Nobody could.
Groshek reached up a long, thin hand and patted Des on the shoulder.
I know you'd never do it on purpose, Des, and I know how crazy it sounds, but there was something different about you tonight. You gave in to your emotions and it unleashed something strange, something dangerous.
Groshek tossed his head back and drained the last of his Kortig, shuddering as it went down.
Just watch yourself, Des. Please. I've got a bad feeling. Be careful, Groshek, Dez replied with another laugh. Nymordians aren't known for relying on their feelings. It's not good for business. Groshek studied him carefully for a moment, then nodded wearily. True. Maybe I'm just tired. I should get some sleep, and so should you.
They shook hands, and Dez left the cantina.
Chapter 5.
The streets of Apatros were dark. Oro charged such high rates for power that everyone turned off all their lights when they went to bed, and tonight the moon was only the barest sliver in the sky. There wasn't even the cantina's glow to guide him. Groshek had shut off the lights on its walls and dome until he opened the next day. Dez stayed in the middle of the street, trying to avoid barking his shins on the debris hidden in the darker shadows along the edges. Yet somehow, despite the near-absolute darkness, he saw them coming. It was a split second before it happened, a sense that danger was coming, and where it was coming from. Three silhouettes leapt at him, two coming head-on and another attacking from behind. He ducked forward just in time, feeling the metal pipe that would have cracked his skull and knocked him cold, swiping through the air a hair-breadth above him. He popped back up as it passed and lashed out with a fist, driving into the featureless head of the nearest figure. He was rewarded with the sick crunch of cartilage and bone. He ducked again, this time to the side, and the pipe that would have brained him square between the eyes thumped down hard across his left shoulder. He staggered to the side, driven by the force of the blow. But in the darkness, it took a moment for his opponents to locate him, and by then, he had regained his balance. Through the gloom, he could just make out the vague outlines of his attackers. The one he'd punched was slowly standing up. The other two stood wary and ready. He didn't have to see their faces to know who they were. The ensign and the two soldiers who'd half-carried the man from the cantina. Dez could smell the reek of Corellian ale wafting up at him, confirming their identities. They must have waited outside the cantina and followed him until they thought they could get the jump on him. That was good. It meant they hadn't gone back to their ship to get their blasters. They came at him again, rushing him all at once. They had the numbers and months of military hand-to-hand combat training on their side. Dez had strength, size, and years of bare-knuckle brawling on his. But in the darkness, none of that really mattered. Dez met their charge head-on, and all four combatants tumbled to the ground. Punches and kicks landed without any thought given to target or strategy. The blind fighting the blind. Each blow he landed brought a satisfying grunt or groan from his opponents. But his enjoyment was limited by the pummeling his own body was enduring. It didn't matter if his eyes were open or closed. He couldn't see a thing. He reacted on instinct. Aches and pains were washed away in the darkness by the adrenaline pumping through his veins. And then suddenly he saw something. Someone had drawn a vibroblade. It was still black as the heart of the mines during a cave-in, yet Dez could see the blade clearly, as if it glowed with an inner fire. It stabbed toward him, and he grabbed the wrist of the wielder, twisting it back and driving it toward the dark mass from which it had appeared. There was a sharp cry, and then a choking gurgle, and suddenly, the burning blade in his vision winked out, the threat extinguished. The mass of bodies entwined with his quickly untangled, two of them scampering clear. The third was motionless. A second later, he heard the click of a luma switching on, and he was momentarily blinded by its beam of light. Eyes squeezed shut, he heard a gasp.
He's dead!
One of the soldiers exclaimed.
You killed him!
Shading his eyes against the illumination, Dez glanced down to see exactly what he'd expected. The ensign lying on his back, the vibroblade plunged deep into his chest. The luma flicked off, and Dez braced himself for another assault. Instead, he heard the sounds of footsteps fleeing in the night, heading toward the docking pads. Dez looked down at the body, planning to grab the glowing blade and use its light to guide him through the darkness. But the blade wasn't glowing now. In fact, he realized it had never really glowed at all. It couldn't have. Vibroblades weren't energy weapons. Their blades were simple metal.
There were more pressing concerns than how he had seen the vibroblade in the darkness, however. As soon as they reached their ship, the soldiers would report to their commander, who would report the incident to the Oro authorities. Oro would turn the planet upside down looking for him. Dez didn't like his chances. It would be the word of a miner, one with a history of brawls and violence at that, against two Republic naval soldiers. No one would believe it had been an act of self-defense. And had it been, really? He had seen the blade coming. Could he have disarmed his opponent without killing him? Dez shook his head. He didn't have time for guilt or regrets. Not now. He had to find somewhere safe to hide out. He couldn't go back to his barracks. That was the first place they'd look. He'd never reached the mines on foot before daybreak, and there was nowhere on the open wastes he could hide once the sun came up. There was only one option, one hope. Eventually, they'd go looking for him there too, but he had nowhere else to go. Groshek must have still been awake because he answered the door only seconds after Dez began pounding on it. The Nymordian took one look at the blood on the young man's hands and shirt and grabbed him by the sleeve.
"Get in here!"
he croaked, yanking Dez through the door and slamming it shut behind him.
"Are you hurt?"
Dez shook his head. "I don't think so. The blood isn't mine." Taking a step back, the Nymordian looked him up and down.
"There's a lot of it. Too much. Smells human."
When Dez didn't reply, Groshek ventured to guess.
"Gods!"
Another shake of the head.
"The ensign,"
Dez said. Groshek dropped his head and swore under his breath.
Who knows? Are the authorities after you?"
"Not yet. Soon." Then, as if trying to justify his actions, he added,
"There were three of them, Groshek. Only one's dead."
His old friend nodded sympathetically.
"I'm sure he had it coming, just like Gerd. But that doesn't change the facts. A Republic soldier is dead, and you're the one who's going to take the blame."
The cantina owner led Dez over to the bar and brought down the bottle of Cortigue brandy. Without saying a word, he poured them each a drink. This time, he didn't stop at half glasses.
"I'm sorry I came here,"
Dez said, desperate to break the uncomfortable silence.
"I didn't mean to get you mixed up in this."
"Getting mixed up in things doesn't bother me,"
Groshek reassured him with a comforting pat on his arm.
"I'm just trying to figure a way to get us out of this now. Let me think."
They downed their glasses. It was all Dez could do to keep from panicking. With each passing second, he expected a dozen men in Oro body armor to crash down the cantina's door. After what seemed like hours, but was probably only a minute or two, Groshek began to talk. He spoke softly, and Dez wasn't sure if the Nymordian was addressing him or merely talking out loud to help himself think.
"You can't stay here. Oro can't afford to lose their Republic contracts. They'll turn the whole colony upside down to find you. We have to get you off-world."
He paused.
"But by morning, your picture will be on every vidscreen in Republic space. Changing your looks won't help much. Even with a wig or facial prosthetics, you tend to stand out in a crowd. So that means we have to get you out of Republic space. And that means..."
Groshek trailed off. Dez waited expectantly.
"Those things you said tonight,"
Groshek ventured,
"about the Sith and the Republic. Did you mean it? Did you really mean it?"
"I don't know, I guess so."
There was another long pause, as if the bartender was gathering himself.
"How would you feel about joining the Sith?"
he suddenly blurted out. Dez was caught completely off guard.
"What? I know people. I can get you off-world. Tonight. But these people aren't looking for passengers. The Sith need soldiers. They're always recruiting, just like those Republic officers tonight.
Dez shook his head.
I don't believe this. You work for the Sith? You always said never to take sides. I don't work for the Sith,
Groshek snapped.
I just know people who do. I know people who work for the Republic, too. But they're not going to be much help in this situation. So I need to know, Dez. Is this something you want?
I don't have a lot of other options.
Dez mumbled in reply.
Maybe, maybe not. If you stay here, the Aura authorities are sure to find you. This wasn't a cold-blooded murder. The judiciary probably won't let you get off by pleading self-defense, but they'll have to admit there were extenuating circumstances. You'll serve time on one of the penal colonies, 5, maybe 6 years, and then you're a free man. Or I join the Sith.
Groshek nodded.
Or you join the Sith. But if I'm going to help you do this, I want to be sure you know what you're getting into.
Dez thought about it, but not for long.
I've spent my entire life trying to get off this hunk of rock, he said slowly. If I go to a prison world, I'm trading one barren, blasted planet for another. No different than staying right here. If I join the Sith, at least I'm out from under Oro's thumb.
And you heard what that Republic commander said about them. The Sith respect strength. I think I'll be able to hold my own.
I don't doubt that,
Groshek conceded.
But don't dismiss everything else that commander said. He was right about the Brotherhood of Darkness. They can be ruthless and cruel. They bring out the worst in some people. I don't want you to fall into that trap.
First you tell me to join the Sith, Dez said. Now you're warning me against joining them. What's going on?
The Nymordian gave a long, gurgling sigh.
You're right, Dez. The decision is made. Grim fate and ill fortune have conspired against you. It's not like Sabacc. You can't fold a bad hand. In life, you just play the cards you're dealt.
He turned away, heading for the small stairs at the back of the cantina.
Come on. In a few hours after they've searched the housing units in the colony, they'll start searching the starport for you. We have to hurry if we want to get you safely hidden away on one of the freight cruisers before then.
Dez reached out across the bar and grabbed Groshek's shoulder. Groshek turned to face him, and Dez clasped the Nymordian's long, slender forearm.
Thank you, old friend. I won't forget this. I know you won't, Dez.
Though the words were kind, there was an unmistakable sorrow in the gravelly voice. Dez released his grip, feeling awkward, ashamed, scared, grateful, and excited all at the same time. He felt like he needed to say something else, so he added,
I'll make this up to you somehow. The next time we meet. Your life here is over, Dez,
Groshek said, cutting him off.
There won't be a next time. Not for us.
The Nymordian shook his head.
I don't know what's ahead of you, but I get the feeling it isn't going to be easy. Don't count on others for help. In the end, each of us is in this alone. The survivors are those who know how to look out for themselves.
With that, he turned away, his feet shuffling briskly across the cantina's floor as he headed to the back exit. Dez hesitated a moment, Groshek's words burning into his mind, then rushed off to follow. Huddled in the hold of the ship, Dez tried to get comfortable. He'd been crammed into the small smuggler's hatch for nearly an hour. It was a tight fit for a man of his size. 20 minutes earlier, he'd heard an Oro patrol come to inspect the ship. They'd made a cursory search. Not finding the fugitive they were seeking, they'd left. A few seconds later, the captain, a Rodian pilot, had rapped hard on the panel keeping Dez hidden.
You stay until engines go,
He'd called in passable galactic basic.
We take off, you come out. Not before.
Dez hadn't recognized him when he climbed aboard. He'd looked like any other Rodian he'd ever seen. Just another independent freighter captain picking up a load of cortosis, hoping to sell it on some other world for enough profit to keep a ship flying another few months. If Oro had offered a reward for Dez's capture, the captain probably would have sold him out. That meant the Oro managers hadn't put a price on his head. They were more worried about paying out a bounty than letting a fugitive escape Republic justice. It wasn't important that they found him. As long as they could show the Republic, they'd tried. Groshek must have realized all this when he made the arrangements to smuggle Dez aboard. The high-pitched whine of the engines powering up caused Dez to brace himself against the walls of his close quarters. A few seconds later, the whine became a deafening roar, and the ship lurched beneath him. The repulsors fired, counterbalancing the vessel, and Dez felt the press of the G's as the ship took to the sky. He kicked the panel once, knocking it free, and untangled himself from the hidey hole. The captain and crew weren't around. They would all be at their stations for liftoff. Dez didn't know their destination. All he knew was that at the end of the trip, a human woman was waiting to sign him up for the Sith Army. As before, the thought filled him with a mix of emotions. Fear and excitement dominated all the others. There was a slight jostling of the ship as it broke atmosphere and began to speed away from the tiny mining world. A few seconds later, Dez felt an unfamiliar but unmistakable surge as they jumped to hyperspace. A sudden sense of liberation filled his spirit. He was free. For the first time in his life, he was beyond the grasping reach of Oro and its cortosis mines. Groshek had said that grim fate and ill fortune were conspiring against him. But Dez wasn't so sure now. Things hadn't worked out quite the way he'd planned. He was a fugitive, with the blood of a Republic soldier on his hands, but he had finally escaped a Patros. Maybe the cards he'd been dealt weren't so bad after all. In the end, he'd gotten the one thing he wanted most. And when you came right down to it, wasn't that the only thing that really mattered? Chapter 6. Fassira's yellow sun was directly overhead, beaming down across the lush valley and over the jungle camp where Dez and his fellow Sith troopers waited. Beneath the shelter of a Sidera tree, Dez ran a quick system check on his TC-22 blaster rifle to pass the time. The power pack was fully charged, good for 50 shots. His backup power pack checked out too. The aim was off just slightly, a common problem with all TC models. They had good range and power, but over time their scopes could lose precise calibration. A quick adjustment brought it back into line. His hands moved with a quick confidence born of 1,000 repetitions. Over the past 12 months, he'd gone through the routine so many times, he barely even had to think about it anymore. A pre-battle weapons check wasn't standard practice in the Sith militia. But it was a habit he'd gotten into, one that had saved his life on several occasions. The Sith army was growing so fast that supply couldn't keep up with demand. The best equipment was reserved for veterans and officers, while new recruits were forced to make do with whatever was available. Now that he was a sergeant, he could have requested a better model, but the TC-22 was the first weapon he'd learned to fire, and he'd become pretty good with it. Dez figured a little routine maintenance was a better option than learning to master the subtle nuances of another weapon. His blaster pistol, however, was top of the line. Not all Sith troopers were given pistols. For most soldiers, a medium-range, semi-repeating rifle was weapon enough. They'd probably be dead long before they ever got close enough to their enemy to use a pistol. But in the past year, Dez had proven a dozen times over that he was more than just turret fodder. Soldiers good enough to survive the initial rush and get in tight to the enemy ranks needed a weapon more suited to close quarters fighting. For Dez, that weapon was the GSI-21D, the finest disruptor pistol manufactured by Galactic Solutions Industries.
Optimum range was only 20 meters, but within that distance, it was capable of disintegrating armor, flesh, and droid plating with equal efficiency. The 21D was illegal in most Republic-controlled sectors of the galaxy, a testament to its awesome destructive potential. The Disruptor's power pack carried only enough charge for a dozen shots, but when he was eye-to-eye with an opponent, it rarely took more than one. He slid the pistol into the holster clipped to his belt, checked the vibroblade in his boot, and turned his attention to his troops. All around him, the men and women of his unit were following his lead, making similar inspections of their own equipment as they waited for the orders. He couldn't help but smile. He'd trained them well. He'd joined the Sith armies as a way to escape both prison and Apatros itself. But it hadn't taken him long to actually grow fond of the soldier's life. There was a camaraderie among the men and women who fought at his side, a bond that quickly extended to include Dez himself. He'd never felt any connection to the miners on Apatros, and indeed had always considered himself something of a loner. But in the military, he'd found his true place. He belonged here with the troops. His troops. Senior Trooper Adenar noticed his gaze and responded by thumping a closed fist lightly against his chest twice, just over his heart. It was a gesture known only to members of the unit. A private sign for loyalty and fidelity. A symbol of the bond they all shared. Dez returned the gesture. He and Adenar had been in the same unit since day one of their military careers. The recruiter had signed them up together and assigned them both to the Gloomwalkers, Lieutenant Ulibor's unit. Adenar picked up his rifle and sauntered over to where his friend was sitting.
You figure we're going to need that disruptor pistol of yours any time soon, Sarge?
No harm in being prepared, Dez replied,
whipping out the disruptor and giving it a spinning flourish before returning it to its holster.
I wish they'd give us the go-ahead already, Adenar grumbled. We've been in position for 2 days now. How long are they going to wait?
Dez shrugged. We can't go until they're ready to move in with the main force. We go too early, and the plan falls apart.
The Gloomwalkers had earned quite a reputation over the past year. They'd been in scores of battles on half a dozen worlds, and they'd tasted far more than their share of victories. They'd gone from being one of 1,000 expendable frontline units to elite troops reserved for critical missions. Right now, they were the key to capturing the manufacturing world of Fassira, if someone would just give them the order to go. Until then, they were stuck in this jungle camp an hour's march away from their objective. They'd been here only a couple of days, but it was already beginning to take its toll. Adenar began to pace. Dez sat calmly in the shade, watching him march back and forth.
"Don't wear yourself out," he said after a minute. "We're not going anywhere until nightfall at the earliest. You might as well get comfortable."
Adenar stopped pacing, but he didn't sit down.
"Lieutenant says this is going to be easy as a spice rum," he said,
trying to keep his voice casual.
"You figure he's right?"
Lieutenant Ulibor had received many accolades for the success of his troops, but everyone in the unit knew who was really in charge when the blaster bolts started flying. The fact had become painfully clear nearly a year before back on Kashyyyk, where Dez and Adenar had seen their first action. The Brotherhood of Darkness had tried to secure a foothold in the Mid-Rim by invading the system, sending in wave after wave of troops to capture the resource-rich homeworld of the Wookiees. But the planet was a Republic stronghold, and they weren't about to retreat, no matter how badly outnumbered. When the Sith fleet first landed, their enemies simply vanished into the forest. The invasion turned into a war of attrition, a long, drawn-out campaign fought among the branches of the Rosher trees high above the planet's surface. The Sith troopers weren't used to fighting in the treetops, and the thick foliage and Kashyyyk vines of the forest canopy provided perfect cover for the Republic soldiers and their Wookiee guides to launch ambushes and guerrilla raids. Thousands upon thousands of the invaders were wiped out, most dying without even seeing the opponent who'd fired the fatal shot. But the Sith Masters just kept sending more troops in. The Gloomwalkers were part of the second wave of reinforcements. During their first battle, they were separated from the main lines, cut off from the rest of the army. Alone and surrounded